Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls, and if you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer on the show, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund. Cody, Lauri Markkanen.
Bulls are back.
Bulls are back.
In the form of Lauri Markkanen's play in Eurobasket.
Finland national team.
For
balling out.
His native Finns. 3-1 in Lauri Markkanen's dominating Eurobasket right now in the form of 22.5 points per game. All the big plays at the end of every game. An upstart Finnish squad, I think you might call him, because you probably can't name any Finnish basketball players besides Lauri Markkanen and
Bulls legend Eric Murphy.
Correct. I think were the only two names I recognized on the roster when I scanned it quickly. They're playing in Helsinki, so got a little bit of the home crowd advantage. But Lowry's helped him upset France last week in overtime. He made the big plays to help him beat Poland in overtime over the weekend. They just beat Greece today. We're recording this on a Tuesday evening, and he's been everything the Bulls would want from the number 7 overall pick in the draft, shooting 50% on threes, 56% from the field, and he just looks phenomenal so far for him, so that's why the Bulls are back.
That's right, and I mean, we have to, of course, say the caveat of this is not NBA competition.
I like it better when we don't say the caveat, though.
But the caveat to that is this is better competition than he was playing against at Arizona, and probably better than he was playing against at Summer League.
Yeah, I would think so. Especially like France is trotting out who? Like Boris Diaw, Joffrey Laverne, Evan Fournier.
Right.
So like the French, when they beat the French, like that's a big deal, I think, in terms of competition for this this tournament. Certainly. But I mean, has anything stood out to you? Like this, in Vegas, you could see the flashes of his offensive potential. And obviously, we both watched Steven Vegas, you were there in person. We watched that a little more closely, so we're going off highlights and anything we can find online here in a stream and everything. But, like, doesn't it feel a little different this time by way of what Markkanen's doing? Like, he looks like he's completely in the flow of everything. And he looks like a guy that, if he can translate, I'm not saying 22.5 points per game this year, next year, even 2 or 3 years down the road from now, but if he translates this type of poise to the NBA moving forward, like it feels like something.
That's the thing that's really stood out to me. He has just not been afraid to let the shots fly, and he's taking deep threes, he's taking contested threes. His length allows him to get these shots off. Like, I've been really impressed with that. Like, and I mean, it's also the kind of thing where, like, you know, you kind of hear that, you know, there are certain guys who are great shooters in college who try to adapt to the NBA three-point line. It's not working. He's taking deep shots. I think that's going to translate.
Yeah, and what he's doing too is, I think this is important. He's scoring from all over on the basketball court here, which is a big deal because when you justify passing on Dennis Smith, for example, in the draft like the Bulls did to take Lauri Markkanen, he better be, and given his defensive deficiencies so far and how he projects as a defensive player, and that's to say not a difference maker at this point, he's only 20. But it's his offensive talents that justify that number 7 pick, that justify giving up the number 16 overall pick in that first round that so many people have criticized. He better transcend the offensive side of the floor in various ways. And he is. He's scoring on three-pointers. He's scoring on the pick and pop.
Got some dunks.
He's got some ferocious dunks where it looks like he's mad at the rim. Now, that's going to be probably a lot different when there's legit rim protectors in there. In NBA competition, but he's taking big guys off the dribble and like hitting mid-range pull-up shots or little runners or little floaters, stuff like that, little turnarounds over one shoulder or the other. He's getting to the free throw line, not a ton, but 5 or 6 times a game, which can make a difference sometimes. I know some of those fouls are late in the game too, but like he is scoring in a variety of ways, which is just vital because you look at Doug McDermott on the Bulls, and this is not a comparison between the two whatsoever. But they all said, oh, Doug scores in 100 ways coming out of college, the most versatile scorer. Well, in the NBA, the only thing he did was spot up and shoot threes. That was it, okay? Like, Lauri Markkanen is already showing you, like, 17 different ways that he can score the basketball on the floor and be a difference maker. And that has to happen for the Bulls moving forward when they project into their future. And I think this leads to, again, I know the competition, like you said, is nothing like he's going to see in the NBA. But this leads to, I guess, a bigger philosophical question. And I'd like to tie it almost to the Kyrie Irving debate that's been going on in the NBA lately since he got traded to the Celtics. Like, is Kyrie Irving a franchise superstar, a franchise centerpiece that you build your team around from day one when you're at rock bottom and you're trying to win a title? Absolutely not.
I don't think so either.
He doesn't change a game enough to win a championship. I don't think you're off to a great start making the conference finals every year if your first piece on your team is Kyrie Irving even. But what Kyrie Irving is an absolute otherworldly offensive basketball player who can score in a variety of ways and certainly be the number two on a championship team. I mean, we've literally seen that, you know what I mean? When they beat the Warriors a couple of years ago and he hit the big shots. Like, my criticism of the Bulls and the Jimmy Butler trade all along was they did not get a bona fide star player in number one. And when you give up your best player to get that, and who's under a really good contract, who has 2 years left on his deal, and who has taken such strides that Jimmy Butler did, and who is a two-way player, my criticism was they didn't get a star. You know what? If they get an offensive stud who can be a number two and just throw up 22 points per game in his prime, then you're onto something here. You know what I mean? You're onto something.
Here's the thing. There was never an expectation that Lauri Markkanen was going to be the Bulls' next franchise player.
No.
When they made this trade. The next guy that they get who's going to be their franchise player is going to be, whether it's Michael Porter or Marvin Bagley or Luka Doncic or whoever they take in the next draft or the next draft, where they're going to have a top three pick probably both years. That's who's going to be their guy. But yeah, if Markkanen can be, you know, your second or third guy, he can develop into that and be, like you said, a 20-point-a-game scorer. If he even becomes passable on the defensive end and can
just
score,
okay.
Right. Now, he doesn't. I'm not even asking him to be great, but just be not a liability.
Yeah. Don't be a mismatch for the other team.
Become what Kevin Love has become. Like, Kevin Love is still not a great defender, but he's at least, you can keep him on the floor now.
Kevin Love has the second greatest defensive sequence in Cavaliers history
right
after LeBron's block when he managed to stay in front of Steph Curry game 7 on the
right
line.
Right, but what I'm saying is you can have him out on the floor and at least the effort is there and he can stay in front of guys. Like, even if he's not a great defender, if Markkanen can develop at least to that level of competency on the defensive end, on top of what he can do offensively, that's going to make people feel a lot better about the Butler trade.
Yeah, and I think this is exactly what the Bulls envision Lauri Markkanen being in the NBA at some point. You know what I mean? When he develops, when he's burgeoning, like, a guy who can score the basketball in a variety of ways and who you can count on, you know, to toss up 20 points a night. And look, a lot of guys can score 20 points a game. Like, there's a moment in time when Jimmy Butler was averaging 20 points per game even before last season when he's really transcended to a superstar. Like, that first breakout season, averaging 20 points per game was like a big plateau for him to reach. That was like a hard 20 points per game. You know what I mean? Like, Jimmy banging his way into the paint, getting fouled, hitting the floor, bullying his way to the hoop, getting a steal and a dunk in transition. Like, didn't it always just feel difficult? Like, Lauri Markkanen is a guy who the Bulls' dream is for him to fall out of bed in the morning and throw up 20 because he's 7 foot and can shoot it from anywhere. I feel like. Is that a decent goal, I guess, for this team to have for him, or a decent expectation? I love how we're talking Lauri Markkanen expectations like 4 years in advance of when they're probably going to be good, but hey, this is what we do in the summer. Like, it feels like that can be an expectation.
Well, the other thing is, this is like, this season, we know the Bulls are not going to win more than, you know, 20, 25 games this season. We got to come up with other things to watch, and whether Lauri Markkanen can develop into that kind of guy is going to be something to watch. If you want to get tickets to see the Bulls and see Lauri Markkanen in person this season, you know where you should go.
I want to let you know, our episode is brought to you by SeatGeek.
That's right.
Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy. With SeatGeek, it's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets with just a few clicks. SeatGeek helps you get the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician up close and in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, anytime, with just a few clicks, instantly find seats. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find the most amazing deals. And you always get the most bang for your buck because SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value and identifies the best seats to fit your budget. Every purchase is also fully guaranteed, so always shop SeatGeek with confidence. Make it your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports to concerts to comedy to theater. Locked On Bulls listeners, here's what we need you to do. Go download the SeatGeek app. You know it's easy. Get it on your phone and enter promo code LONBA, just how it sounds, LONBA, and SeatGeek will give you $20 off your first purchase today. Late last week, Sean, I don't know, it was lost in translation, whatever, I think Thursday maybe, the Bulls enacted a minor, smaller version of what's a greater goal for them, mm-hmm. and that is to acquire assets by taking on some bad contract money from teams that are more desperate than them when it comes to their financial situations. Fill them in. The Bulls now have opened the Quincy Pondexter era.
The Quincy Pondexter and maybe the Buckets Pondexter era, possibly.
The Buckets Pondexter era?
His husky.
Oh, that's his dog's name?
That's his dog. His dog has an Instagram, BucketsQP20.
Oh, I was going to say, because it's not Quincy Pondexter. He's averaged 5 points, maybe 5.9 points per game, if I remember right.
No,
Buckets Pondexter on the NBA floor.
No, Quincy Pondexter has a husky named Buckets, and he used to have an Instagram account that hasn't been updated since 2015. So
I will tell you right now, that will be the most memorable part of the Quincy Pondexter era in Chicago, because the Bulls took on $3.8 million of his from the Pelicans.
We got some cash considerations.
Cash considerations, a second round pick attached for the Bulls. So for all you second round Bulls NBA draft truthers out there, there's a huge middle finger from the organization pocketing a second round pick. And before the Bulls draft with that Pelicans pick next year, I just want everyone to know on draft night, if you're a second round Bulls draft pick truther, I am not. I understand why you're mad. I understand the anger. I'm just at a point in life where I think I've said this before, I can't get that worked up about second round picks. That's just me personally. You reserve the right, and I love your passion and fire about them because it's one of the most entertaining things on Bulls Twitter. But you will have to log your second round pick that they should take before they take it. You don't get to pull the Draymond Green card every single time they pass on Draymond Green or something. But they acquired a second round pick. That is a good thing. Even if it's just a Paul Zipser they add, which you probably only have a 30% chance of finding anyway, a rotation player, assets, always helpful. Quincy Pondexter, not going to be helpful on the basketball floor. He's missed the last 2 years.
He hasn't played in 2 years.
Did he?
He played in 2014-15. He hasn't played in 15-16 or 16-17.
Knee problems?
3 knee surgeries in 20 months.
Yes. I mean, this is Derrick Rose-like knee surgery level and frequency. So I don't know if they're going to keep Pondexter or waive him. I think they'll probably end up waiving him before the regular season opener.
It's not clear about that, though.
Oh, you're not sure?
I don't think he's really going to help them on the court. Back when he was healthy, he was a solid enough 3-and-D wing. He's kind of the same type of player that Justin Holiday is. I don't think he's going to play. But having a $3.8 million expiring contract on your books...
helpful.
It's helpful. Maybe they need some salary to throw into a trade if they want to take on somebody's bad contract to get a pick and it doesn't
you're
quite fit in the trade
exception.
You're
saying it might be a bigger deal later in the calendar year for the Bulls or before the trade deadline in which a $3.8 million salary could be helpful to fill.
Yeah.
I mean, the goal is still to utilize what's left of that trade exception. So the Bulls can absorb that contract into the $15.1 million trade exception or into salary cap space, probably the trade exception, because right now that still projects to be a little bigger than their salary cap space, I believe, assuming they re-sign Nico, right? Like, that's going to be bigger, and they'll still have $12 million, whatever, $11 million left in the trade exception, probably. But they don't have to decide this yet.
By the way, quick segue. Do you want to do Nico watch quickly?
Oh,
It's
the math. 31 days in July,
no,
31 days
math's
in August.
Getting hard.
It's
this is a three-step process.
67 days of Nico Watch.
67 days.
And that's your Nico Watch update. So back to the Poindexter trade.
Nico contract standoff past Labor Day. Back to Poindexter. I don't know what else we're supposed to say about this. We're just debating. I guess I would say I expect them to waive him at some point, because if they add Nico, does that get him 15 players, right?
Yeah.
And they usually carry 13 or 14 because hashtag Bulls are going to Bulls. But,
right.
Like, I don't know. That's why I guess I thought at some point they'll waive him.
Well, I think that we'll waive him at some point, either after the trade deadline if they can't move him, or, you know, maybe, you know, they keep him on there just to be closer to the salary floor. And then if you want to trade, you know, make a trade where you need an extra roster spot in the middle of the season, then you waive him, and, you know, it's fine. You don't. It doesn't matter. Like, that $3.8 million isn't going to do anything for you.
My favorite subplot of this trade is that when you do these deals and you take a player and you take his money and a second-round pick and any cash considerations involved, you, as the Bulls, you still have to send something back to the Pelicans.
Whether
it cannot just be a gift basket either. Like, it has to be a tangible, not even a tangible NBA thing, but it has to be an NBA asset of some form.
Whether it's cash or whether
the rights to anything.
A fake second round pick where it's like top 55 protected,
yes.
So you're never going to get the pick, but you technically are sending a pick back.
Adder Meja, did I say it right?
I don't know. I'm not even convinced it's a real person.
He was taken, I believe, in the 2011 draft by the Lakers.
He came over in the Jose Calderon trade.
Yeah, the acclaimed, famous Jose Calderon trade.
When they traded the most illustrious point guard in franchise history.
The Bulls no longer own the rights to Adder Majuk. Oh, I think I found the pronunciation.
Majuk?
Majuk.
He's from Australia. He's 30 years old. He's probably never going to play in the NBA.
Sudanese-born. Probably will never play in the NBA. I believe he played in, was it Poland or something recently? I might be making up these countries, too. I don't even know at this point.
Anthony Randolph is on the Slovenian national team. We found that out. Bulls legend Anthony Randolph.
Yeah, like Lauri Markkanen apparently was dominating Anthony Randolph, according to Stefan Noah of The Athletic. Great breakdown and analysis.
He's been doing some good stuff.
He had there, because honestly, I would not have been able to give you any in-depth Anthony Randolph information if I hadn't read Stefan's very insightful piece there. But yeah, so say goodbye to the Adder era, I guess. What other Bulls news? Oh, Sean Respher.
Sean Respher.
This is
significant.
Something of significance. The Bulls hired Sean Respher as their director of player development. He spent the last 4 years or so working for the Grizzlies as an assistant coach,
as a scout.
Worked for the Timberwolves under Rick Adelman. Before that, graduated from Michigan State, where he had a pretty good career back in the 90s, mid-40s guy. This is important because there is nothing more important than player development for the Bulls.
And they didn't have a lot of that the last season.
No, not enough of it. Much to the chagrin of some internally, much to the spin of some internally. I think we all know what we saw with our eyes. But they also don't have a large staff and a huge front office by NBA standards. And I guess I should say they don't have a big basketball operations department compared to many other organizations. So this is a key position for some teams, and sometimes the name switches depending what organization it is, whatever the title they want to give them. But off the top of my head, since I started covering the Bulls in 2014, they have not had anyone with the title Director of Player Development that I know of. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know of any person in that position. And look, some teams they'll employ like three shooting coaches. You know what I mean? Or one shooting coach and basically guys to work one-on-one with specific players even, and then give them a title. Like, they're an important figure. They're an important figure, but they don't actually, like, it's half the time it's like a made-up title, but they're an important figure. But I mean, look at even the Warriors, like, have Steve Nash involved in their organization. You know what I mean? Like, is he the reason they're winning a championship? No, but if he works really well with one of the young guys, as a mentor, as an advisor, they consider that important.
That's worth the money to have him on the payroll.
Yes. So the Bulls filling this position that might be fairly regular or normal for other organizations that they haven't had for a few years at least, and I don't know the history of their entire director of player development going back years and years here, but I think it's it can only help, you know what I mean? A respected voice in that locker room and just in the coaching offices around the building.
And if you look at some of the player development in Memphis, you know, Jamichael Green's developed into a pretty good player. I don't know how much of that is based on Sean Respert, mm-hmm. but, you know, he's, you know, they must have seen something that they like with him, you know, his scouting, you know, work that he did on the coaching staff. I think he's, you know, I think this is a good move.
Yeah, and I talked about it on the last episode, the switch of Charlie Henry to the G League Windy City Bulls is official. Nate Linzer back to Fred Hoiberg's staff. This time, it's a promotion for Nate over the last time when he was video coordinator the first year when he was here in Chicago with Hoiberg. Now actually filling that kind of final assistant spot on the bench. You read a feature on Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Tell us about it. We got to always fill our people in on the Tom Thibodeau, Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson updates. We know they've been near and dear to our hearts for better or for worse, whether they're yelling at us, upset with us, doing crazy things, or being really gracious in defeat, or just entertaining us. So fill them in on the Jimmy Butler.
We should do a Locked On Timber Bulls segment
on
the podcast. We're talking about wanting new gimmicks this year for the podcast. We should do Locked On Timber Bulls.
Like, Tibbs made Taj Gibson do 150 push-ups in 60 seconds or something?
We should just keep up with the Timberwolves, and like the most Tibbs-centric things or Jimmy-centric things we should...
Yeah, the Tibbism of the day or whatever. It could be a quote, an action, a drill.
Something like that.
Anything, any story on that front. But what'd you find out, Matt?
So, my good friend Michael Pina wrote a really long feature on Jimmy Butler on Vice Sports, which you can go check out. I tweeted the link to it earlier. You can follow me on Twitter at Hyken. I mean, it's been shared on Twitter today. You can go find it. Mike basically went to Jimmy's house in Southern California and spent a day with him. And there's no huge revelations in the piece in terms of, like, stuff. Like, he didn't really talk about the trade that much. He just kind of said, you know, it's their organization. They made a decision that they wanted to go in a younger direction. Like, I get it. Like, that's basically all he said about the
trade. Headline worthy.
No headline. Right. He also did say that he thrives on confrontation, and Fred Hoiberg is not that kind of guy.
Ooh, a little shade from Jimmy.
And he said that's not a good thing or a bad thing. He was very careful to couch it as not shade.
Yeah.
But
anytime you have to say, no offense,
right?
Don't take any offense, that means you're going to say something that to some people could be taken.
But it was also, like, the most interesting aspect of the piece to me, and you guys, again, it's long, but it's worth going and reading the whole thing, is just the exhaustive detail that it goes into about his daily routine. He wakes up at 5:45 in the morning every morning without an alarm clock. Like, he's just wired to wake up at 5:45. He's in the gym by 6. He does these things.
He only takes 15 minutes to, like, get ready, eat a little breakfast, brush his teeth. That's amazing.
Right.
He's like supercharged.
Right. He's on the gym floor by 6. He starts doing ball handling drills. He does all these different things with Chris Johnson, his trainer. Travell Gaines is a trainer. Chris Johnson is his shooting coach.
Oh, okay.
So he's got
Travell Gaines, the one who called Gar Foreman a liar.
Right. So, but those are his guys. Like, he works out with them every single day. He does these things called 17s that I've never heard of, where you have to go from the baseline to half court, back to the baseline, and then run 15 feet in the other direction in 17 seconds. And he does, like, a sets of those.
A form of a suicide run,
right?
Basically. And he does how many of these? Just again and again?
He just keeps doing them. And like the detail that they go into describing his workout.
How many times a day does he work out? I know in the past he's worked out, like, upward of 3 times a day. Like, is that still?
It still is.
The plan, the regimen.
Yeah, it is. And Travell Gaines says in this piece that Jimmy Butler is addicted to working the way that nobody he's ever worked with is. So this isn't like a huge revelation. We know that Jimmy Butler has this crazy work ethic, and that's why he got from where he was when he first came into the league, when nobody ever really thought he'd be a big star, to, you know, becoming obviously the player that he is today. We kind of know that, but just seeing it broken down into this much detail, how much he puts into it every day, is just, it's a lot of fun to read.
Second greatest work ethic in NBA history after Kobe Bryant. Is that the path we're headed down by the time Jimmy retires?
Are we just excluding Michael Jordan from this?
I said work ethic. Kobe Bryant probably put in more work than Michael Jordan, judging by the fact that MJ smoked a lot of cigars, went to the casino all the time, gambled and played cards all the time. Michael Jordan's the greatest player in NBA history. There's no doubt about that. Michael Jordan was more talented than Kobe Bryant. There's no doubt about that. He was more successful. But to say who has the hardest work ethic, I think a lot of people would say Kobe. You read all the things about Kobe for like the last 15 years?
One thing that was interesting in this piece was Mike said that he thinks that Jimmy Butler, this might have just been his opinion or his editorializing, but he said that Jimmy Butler might be in the best shape of any player in the NBA, which is kind of crazy to think about considering how many guys put in so much
work. I don't like when people say absolute, so I appreciate him saying he might be, you know what I'm saying, or I have a feeling he's one of the top, whatever.
I don't remember the exact wording, but he suggested it.
Yeah, I liked it. Like, that's cool. Like, I believe that about Jimmy Butler. Like, I think that's, if you want to use an absolute, like, that's probably a fair case to do it in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would be hard-pressed, I mean, you guys can tweet at us, email us, send arguments, ask questions. Based on minutes load, dating back to when he became a full-time starter, and what he's done offensively in carrying the burden the last 3 years for the Bulls, who carried a bigger load on both ends of the floor and played that many minutes? Like, he guarded James Harden, LeBron James, Paul George types every single night, and also averaged 20 to 22 points a game and had to make most all of the plays for the Bulls. Like, he had to be in the best shape. And Jimmy wore down once in a while in fourth quarters, but far, far more often than not, he was closing games and coming up with all the big plays in the fourth quarter for the Bulls. So I believe that he's in the best shape in the NBA. You'd have to send me names about someone who's better, and I would look into the argument. But off the top of my head, like, I don't have any. Like, James Harden rests on defense, you know?
Right.
We know that. I mean, LeBron, maybe.
LeBron also takes it easy during a season.
Yeah, like, LeBron in his prime, certainly, probably the best shape in the NBA, I think. And look, LeBron's probably just in as good a shape as Jimmy. He's just not pushing himself as hard in the regular season on defense because he is older, and I think LeBron would admit that
right. Straight
up front. So what's happened the last 3 years, I think that's a great argument you can make. I feel like you had some pushback on my suggestion that Kobe's the hardest worker in NBA history. Like the man, what's the story?
I just want to differentiate that it's you and not me that said this in case Michael Jordan hears this podcast, because he might come to Chicago and try to find us.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would love to have the conversation with MJ about, I mean, if MJ Michael wants Jordan, to sit wanna... down for the podcast and discuss why you're a harder worker than Kobe Bryant, we open invitation anytime. Anywhere on planet Earth,
anything
that
you
we
want
can
discuss.
Get to, anywhere.
Mike, you want to come on Locked On Bulls? The door's always open.
That'd be the biggest get in Locked On Network history.
I think we would probably make a little bit of money off that.
A little bit of headline news. No, I mean, like, look, Kobe. There was a fair degree of the narrative of Kobe Bryant being the hardest worker. When it ended up in the headlines, there was some of that narrative, I think, was planted or planned. When Kobe loses a game at Miami against the LeBron James-led Heat at some point in the Big Three.
It was 2012, I think.
And then the Lakers lose there, and then Kobe's shooting buckets on the Heat's basketball court after the game. When people, including reporters, are still around. He's doing that in part... So they'll say Kobe lost to LeBron and the work never stops.
Right.
Right?
It's very deliberate.
That is true. But we can acknowledge that some of that was, in a way, manufactured, while also acknowledging that is him, though. Like, that is him to the brink and max. Like, all those things. Who was the player that showed up and Kobe said, let's do a workout at 3? And he showed up.
Andrew Bynum.
It was a guard who'd played for the Bucks too. He was on the Bucks when Lee Jenkins confirmed the story with him, I think. I don't know who it was. I don't even think it was a teammate of Kobe's necessarily. But he showed up at 3 p.m. and Kobe meant 3 a.m. workout. And Kobe had told him this at like 11 p.m. So he assumed it was 3 p.m. the next day. And Kobe meant, oh no, I'm going to sleep like an hour or two. And then work out at 3. You missed your workout. Why are you here at 3 p.m.? My next workout's not till 6 p.m. or something. Like, that stuff is real. Like, Kobe is one of the hardest workers in NBA history. Maybe the hardest worker. Like, I think this is just now a existential, philosophical debate. But, like,
it's early September. We go off the rails.
I mean, no one... I think everyone would agree the hardest workers in NBA history are probably... guys from the mid-90s on, right? Like, the workout regimens are only getting more difficult. Like, you see these things. Like, who is it? Dwayne Wade was working out with Paul George on Snapchat the other day. Like, these guys are working out twice a day together, some of the best players in the NBA, pushing each other in LA or whatever city they happen to be in. Like, in the old days, in the 80s, like, they smoked cigarettes in the summer. You know what I mean?
They smoked cigarettes and drink beers at halftime.
Yeah, they partied all summer. Like, Showtime Lakers, trust me, weren't in the gym three times a day in the summer. They were partying most of the offseason. But, like, and I know Dwayne Wade just went on a four-week European vacation, but he's working out there, too, all the time. You know what I mean? Like, his trainer's with him and stuff. So I think, like, when you talk about hardest workers in NBA history, we're naturally going to flow to the more last decade or more recent guys this era. So I think that's a starting point, too, or a little bit of credibility for Kobe having that argument.
By the way, speaking of Dwayne Wade, there's no update. There's been rumors about he might go to Miami, he might go to LA if there's a buyout, but there's no movement on whether there's actually going to be a buyout.
Yeah, like, again, it's all outside speculation, all of which makes sense, all of which tangentially connected people in the NBA and those to Dwayne Wade have discussed, but no one like in Dwayne Wade's camp. Like,
no.
His agent and him have not come to the Bulls and said this. The Bulls have not received yet any declaration that he wants out, he wants bought out, he's willing to take XYZ money or even had money talks. One of the things I do get a kick of is Dwayne Wade's the daily walk with Trey Wade, his dog.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen these on Snapchat?
Oh yeah.
How does a dog like get a Snapchat filter? He's got his own Snapchat like filter. His dog, the walk with his dog. The daily walk with Trey Wade is a thing on Dwayne Wade's Snapchat. How do you get your own Snapchat filter? Can you just make them?
When you're Dwayne...
Or do you have to go, like, does he know the CEO of Snapchat?
When you're Dwayne Wade or somebody of that stature, you got a guy at Snapchat that you can get that to happen
with. It's absolutely hilarious. It's his dog usually not being able to keep up with him, too, because it's like the sixth walk of the day, and Dwayne Wade's like half working out or jogging while he's walking his dog, too, sometimes.
Are we up to three confirmed dogs on the team, by the way? Trey Wade, Buckets Pondexter, Muppet Lopez.
Yeah, I'm sure there's even more than that, too, if we went around the
locker. I think Dwayne has multiple dogs.
Oh, yeah, he has at least two.
Because I think Gabby has a couple.
Maybe three. There's been three dogs in Gabby and D-Wade Snapchats before. I don't know if they're all theirs, but I know they got at least a couple. But, like, the Trey Wade Snapchats, and, like, it's funny because you say it like it's his son or whatever. I know a lot of people consider their dogs their children.
Well, Dwayne
but
Wade
like,
has two sons.
Like, yeah, but, like, he's at a barbecue, like, and there's a Snapchat of Dwayne Wade and his dog, and I'm sure these people at the barbecue know Dwayne Wade, but it looks like a big barbecue, you know, over the holiday weekend, and, like, some people weren't paying attention to Dwayne Wade. Like, they were starstruck by the dog, Trey, not Dwayne. So, that, I get a kick out of that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of how it is with a lot of different, you know, I was at a barbecue this weekend for Labor Day with our mutual friend Ricky O'Donnell, who was at his place. A couple of his friends brought dogs. The dogs were the celebrity guests.
Always. Always and forever. Like, that's the best thing you gotta do. But, you know, sometimes having a dog's like having a boat. Like, sometimes it's best to have one of your best friends have the dog or the boat, so they have more responsibility than you do if you're traveling and such.
Our lifestyle of covering the NBA and working weird hours and traveling and stuff, like, it's not conducive
for dog schedules.
Not conducive for having another live, living thing be my responsibility.
Correct.
I'm a big fan of other people's dogs. I am not in a point in my life where I can have a dog of my own.
All right, and I think thus concludes the Locked On Bulls podcast for today. Your dog advice, your Dwayne Wade dog updates, and Lauri Markkanen shining, more important than anything for the Bulls. You can follow Sean on Twitter at Hyken, myself at Cody Westerlund. Locked On Bulls is on Twitter, on Facebook by its name. We are on iTunes, a lot of other places too, Stitcher, Audio Boom. Tune in. What am I missing?
Google Play. We also, these home speakers are all the rage now. We got the Google Home, got the Amazon
Alexa. Alexa's our girl now.
If you have any of those, you can go, if you have an Amazon Echo, the Amazon Alexa, you can just say, Alexa, play Locked On Bulls. It will play Locked On Bulls.
You don't even have to get up off your couch.
If you have the Google Home, you can say, okay, Google, play Locked On Bulls. It'll do that. So
boom.
Go do that.
Life-changing. Most of all,
go
after
on
you
iTunes,
do that.
Five-star review.
Do that at your party. When there's lots of people there.
And
you'll
dogs
really
with Snapchat
cool.
filters.
And then a lot of people will hear about Locked On Bulls too. So please tell your friends about it as well.
We're going to ramp up coming up because, you know, we've been doing one a week because there's not really that much to do during the off season. Coming up, you know, we're a couple weeks out of Media Day. Next week, we're going to get back to multiple episodes. We're going to ramp up. And then once we get back into the swing of the season and training camp, we're going to have them more closer to the daily basis like we were during the season. So if you are a fan of Locked On Bulls, there's going to be a lot more Locked On Bulls coming up. So thanks for listening. We'll be back with you guys soon.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.